My uncle dropped off 1,000 chickens at my house one day, and I woke up in the morning and there was this horrendous smell, chickens everywhere, feces, some were dead, and I realized this was not a normal childhood. On this episode of the CEO Lawyer Podcast, I'm going to talk about the infamous chicken story and exactly what happened, what we ended up doing with all these chickens, and the life lessons that I learned. So let's get started. First of all, my uncle, may he rest in peace, alei rahmo, was the owner of one of the most successful slaughterhouses in Georgia because it was one of the only halal slaughterhouses, which meant they would actually slit the throats of the animals the halal way, where you're supposed to do it in a humane way. If it's a goat or a sheep or something that has long ears, you're supposed to cover their eyes with their ears, get the animal to have like a low resting heart rate, and so that they submit completely to you before you slaughter their neck, before you cut their throats off. And the reason you do it that way is because you want the animal, first, you want it to be a humane killing, but you also want the animal to not have a lot of blood all throughout its veins and throughout its body, because it actually makes it a lower quality meat. And so you want to have all the blood and all the filth completely secreted from its system. And that's why you cut it right at the neck, but you don't decapitate it. So you just got to go from like one side of the neck all the way to the other side, let that throat and all the guts and the blood spill out and spew out. And so we had a lot of those slaughterings growing up because, you know, we're Muslim and my dad is a super old school Palestinian guy. I'll tell you how we used to slaughter animals before I get into this chicken story. So we used to have a mechanic shop on 1804 Murray Avenue in Dalton, Georgia. And every year for Eid, which is the equivalent of Christmas for Muslims, we would slaughter an animal. That's just something that we did. It was customary. It was religious. It was something that was very in tune with our upbringing. And so every year before Eid came around, we would always buy like a little mini goat or like a small sheep or a little lamb, and we'd keep feeding it, we'd stuff it. We wanted to make sure. We used to go across the street to Whitco Produce because they'd always have old produce that they would throw out. There was this produce company across the street from our mechanic shop where they would always throw out old lettuce and tomatoes and veggies. We'd grab all of those vegetables, sometimes fruits, and we would feed it to our goats. I mean, they were eating good. And so our goats and our lambs would just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And by the time it was time to slaughter them, we had a nice amount of meat. And if you've ever tried to slaughter an animal, you know that one of the most annoying parts is skinning the animal. And this is what we used to do. Because we had a mechanic shop, we had these car lifts outside. So as we're stuffing this animal over the course of many years and feeding it this expired produce, we would slaughter the animal and cut its throat off right outside where the rocks are in the backside of the mechanic shop. And then we would, once all the blood was spewed out, we'd try to put it in a bucket as much as possible, but it really just looked like a crime scene if you didn't know any better. And we'd drag the goat or the sheep all the way to the front of the shop where we had the lift gate, and we would tie the leg of the animal to the lift gate and lift up the animal in the gate so that way the animal is kind of just like hanging and dangling there. And what my dad used to do was cut a little slit around the animal's ankle, right where the wool would meet, you know, just the regular skin and bone. And when we cut that slit, we would put this air hose inside between the wool and the skin, and we would air up the animal. And so what happened was the skin would actually inflate and detach. So the wool would detach from the rest of the animal and the rest of the skin, which made it so much easier to skin the animal. And now that it's inflated and there's some sort of separation from the skin and the wool and the rest of the animal, now you can just go and take your knife and just cut the animal and remove all the wool, and boom, you're already in preparation mode to eat that animal within the next 4 hours. So we just learned a lot about slaughtering and killing animals at a young age. And a couple of times, because we lived in the city and not in the county, you're just not allowed to kill animals like that. So we'd have the sheriff and the police come by, and you know, we're sitting there going, Bismillah, Allahu Akbar, and cutting these animals. And these like old school white sheriffs would be like, hey man, can't do that over here. So very fun times growing up in Dalton, Georgia. But needless to say, we had an opportunity where we were able to basically adopt 1,000 chickens. My uncle owned this slaughterhouse. Let me tell you something about my uncle. May you rest in peace, Ali Arhamo. He became like a millionaire in 6 months from this slaughterhouse business. It was a ridiculous amount of money because he somehow met a very high demand and coupled with the supply that he was able to produce. And my uncle had four sons that were about the same age as me and my three brothers. It was like, we'll talk about this some other time. It's like my dad and my uncle were like competing to have children at the same time. And so I have cousins that are exactly the same age as my brothers. It's kind of weird. So they're like four boys back to back, all born between like 1987, 1991, four boys on each side. So us four boys grew up working in the mechanic shop. Those four boys grew up working in the slaughterhouse. So the slaughterhouse boys would be basically killing animal, like sheep, chicken, livestock. And, you know, the older kids that were, I would say 12, 13 years old at the time, maybe 11, they would handle the bigger animals like the cows and the llamas and things like that. Well, I guess the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, or some sort of governmental entity decided that my uncle could no longer operate this slaughterhouse and he needed something to do with the animals. Now, it's easy to get rid of like 50 or 100 sheep pretty quickly because like every Arab and every Pakistani and every Indo-Pak or Urdu-speaking Muslim person wants to have a sheep because it's like, hey, I just want one, I'll slaughter it on my own, Zabiha style, for Eid. But what are you gonna do with 1,000 chickens? So he called up my dad and said, hey, I don't know what to do with these chickens. And my dad, being, you know, the type of person that he is, said, hey, I have plenty of room right next to my house. Just bring all the chickens. So here we are living in Fifth Avenue in Dalton, Georgia, and not like the New York Fifth Avenue, but like the hood Fifth Avenue in Dalton, Georgia. My uncle pulls up with a big trailer with a bunch of chickens in there. And because there were so many chickens and not enough room in this trailer, they would basically jump on top of each other and they would basically kill each other, like suffocating the ones underneath them. So only the strongest chickens survived. We basically moved all these chickens into a 2,000 square foot area that was right next to our house in Fifth Avenue. We put up a couple of fences as good as we could, but some chickens would escape. Obviously, a lot of them would die. And that was just the solution because we didn't know anywhere else to put these chickens. Within a couple of days, the entire neighborhood started smelling like dead, rotten chickens. And talk about the feed that you had to use to keep them well fed. Talk about the feces. Talk about the dead chickens that you couldn't do anything with. Like, where are you even going to throw them away? And you also don't want to touch them because they got like all these diseases. So within a couple of days, now sheriff, police department's coming, knocking on our door. Hey, Mr. Awad, can't have all these chickens, okay? We're gonna give you a fine. I don't know if they had that kind of southern accent, but they basically told us that if we don't get rid of these chickens, that we're gonna get a fine. And my dad was just kind of old school, was like, hey, fine, just fine me. It's not like I have the money to pay you anyway. And so over the course of a couple of weeks, you know, we'd sell some of the chickens. We ate some of them. We slaughtered some of them and just kind of kept them in the freezer. And the rest just kind of died off on their own. But it was probably the nastiest couple of weeks of my childhood because my bedroom where I shared with my three brothers was right next to these 1,000 chickens that were literally right outside. And you would smell the chickens every morning and every night. It would, like, the smell would just stick to your clothes. Like, think of like a really bad smoker. Now you can smell the smoke and the nicotine on them. Well, imagine that being like chicken feces and excrement, right? It was nasty. That's my chicken story growing up in Fifth Avenue. But I did learn a couple of things about my uncle during that time. And the first thing is, my uncle, when he actually was successful during that time in the slaughterhouse, he gave us a lot of very great presents during Eid. So I was probably 8 or 9 years old at this time. And he gave each and every one of us $100. And I'd never forget that because being an 8 or 9 year old, getting a $100 gift like Eid for Eid was a huge deal. Like, you know, if you're, you know, you celebrate Christmas, you remember in your childhood, you would get like a couple of t-shirts or you would get, I don't know, like a Game Boy or something. I don't know what people did because we didn't celebrate Christmas. But imagine your normal gift is like $10, $20 worth, right? And now all of a sudden 1 year you're getting $100. That's huge. That's very memorable. And that's the one thing I remember about my uncle that always stood out was he was a very caring and genuine guy that would actually take care of the people around him. And he had 10 children of his own, and then plus the, like, I don't know, 30, 40 nieces and nephews at the time. So it was a big deal that he was passing out all that money. But there were a couple of sad things that happened in his story and his, like, meteoric rise to success and then the subsequent crash. But I think that the bottom line is, you know that you have real family when you can pick up the phone, call someone and say, hey man, I got to get rid of 1,000 chickens. Where can I put them? And that person says, hey, I got your back. Just deliver them right next to my children's bedrooms. They'll be fine with it. So that's my chicken story growing up as an 8-9-year-old kid on Fifth Avenue in Dalton, Georgia. So if you were looking for part two and wondering why I gave you the first part of the chicken story, I didn't think people actually cared about this. For some reason, I thought this was normal. But if you like this video, you like this content, just let me know in my podcast on YouTube. Just like and comment. Give me some feedback, and I'll tell you more about the crazy childhood stories growing up as an Awad in Dalton, Georgia. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We'll see you on the next one.